Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, we're asking, what will you do if you need to pay for care in old age? That's been the focus of wrangling in Westminster this week, including plans for a hefty tax rise to pay for extra care provision. And it's our focus on the podcast as well. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Long-term care is a problem that most of us don't like to think about. That includes successive governments who for years have kicked the can down the road on implementing meaningful changes to our care system. This week, however, brought plans to divert billions of extra funding into care in future years, paid for with a rise in national insurance and dividend tax. To discuss what those changes mean and the difficult question of planning for care costs, I'm joined by Micah Curry, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Micah, welcome along. There's loads to talk about from this week about these tax and these care funding changes. Perhaps we should start, if it's possible, with outlining at a high level what the government has announced this week.
Yes, thanks, Ed. So definitely a very busy week in Parliament with wide-ranging implications for our personal finances and for long-term care. So under this banner of fixing the long-running, deeply entrenched problems in the adult social care system, Boris Johnson announced plans to increase national insurance contributions and dividend taxes to raise £12 billion to plug a system that, as we know, is woefully underfunded and doesn't quite work. In practice, what does it mean? Well, from April next year, April 2022, the working population will see on our pay slips every month a health and social care levy, which is going to be ring-fenced for the specific purpose of improving social care. Now, the way the Prime Minister has sold this is that he's making good on an election manifesto promise to stop people being forced to sell their homes to fund social care as a result of old age, illness, or disability. And what he said is that includes moving to care homes or getting help at home.
Yeah, indeed. And we should probably point out here, there's lots of arguments still going on and likely to go on for some time about whether those promises have been fulfilled, and also making the point that other manifesto promises, certainly not to raise NI, that's been broken by these changes this week. As you hint at there, Micah, you know, the systems for social care are so complicated, really labyrinthine and difficult for us to properly describe on a sort of line-by-line basis here on the podcast. It's probably not the best setting for that. I'll point people to resources like Age UK and the government's own resources online for this if people really do want to see how the system works. But the headline offer that the government's making here is that the total you're going to be asked to pay for your care in the future under this new system is £86,000. But crucially, that £86,000 may not include costs for your food, for your accommodation, which of course is going to make up a big part of the whole that you might pay for residential care costs. So in reality, people may still face, you know, very high care bills, and they may still need to pay, they may still need to use their home to pay for those bills, Micah, and that's an important point. I guess that's what people are going to be worried about when it comes to care.
That's right, Ed. And this whole notion of a cap on care fees isn't something new. I remember writing about this back in 2014. Mm. But what the government is proposing is, under a new means test, if people live in their own homes, they will get all their social care funded by the taxpayer if they have less than £20,000 in assets. Now, that excludes the value of their home. They will be partially funded if they have assets worth up to £100,000. But as ever, the devil's in the detail. Now, if you move into a care home, the value of your property will be included, as is the case with the existing system. And in this scenario, people might need to sell their homes to fund their care if their incomes are low.
Indeed. And there's also this element of putting a charge on the home. It may not be that you have to sell the home immediately, and that certainly applies if someone else is living in it, but a charge is put on the home, and so when someone that's been put into care eventually does die, then the home can be sold, and that the council or the care fund provider will then be paid proceeds from that. Look, Micah, I wanted to broaden this out a bit to a wider discussion about care and what people should do, can do to plan for their care costs. I'm going to say here, we've had in my family actually some personal experience of this just recently. My grandmother has gone into care in the last year or so. She was already in her late 90s, so a ripe old age, and perhaps you can argue it's fair that someone like that who owns a home and is going into residential care should use the value in their home to pay for that care. But what I wanted to talk about from certainly our personal experience is the cost of that care in isolation. You know, the care that she's using is not particularly extravagant. We're not talking about the Ritz here, but the costs are astronomical. I mean, not just tens of thousands of pounds a year, but high tens of thousands of pounds a year. It's quite difficult to get your head around exactly where all those costs come from. You could quite frankly go on a very luxurious holiday for every single week of the year, and you would still probably not have the same costs as we're paying to put her in care. Mm. Look, it's hard to see, based on her experience at least, how anyone, apart from the really, really wealthy people out there, are going to have enough in savings that they don't have to worry on some level about care costs. Isn't the truth, Micah, that for many people, if large care costs do land, it's going to be property wealth that has to pay for it, and that families in general should probably plan for that?
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Ed. Even those who have diligently saved and invested to ensure comfort and contentment in their golden years just too often forget or simply ignore a huge potential outlay which they could face in their old age, and that's care home fees. Mm-hmm. I think two defining demographic trends of the 21st century are, one, an aging population, and of course the other being the growth of the so-called sandwich generation, where people are squeezed between the pressures of caring for elderly parents and supporting adult children. And one of the reasons for that is dementia. Dementia is a massive challenge in the UK. You know, every year there's about 250,000 people developing dementia, which is one every 3 minutes. One in six people over the age of 80 have dementia, and those people need specialist care. You know, estimates are that one in three women and one in four men aged 65 today are likely to need care. And it's about the costs of that. It's about the specialist training, and even with these caps that the government are putting in place, is, do we have the staff? Do we have the training? Because the chances are that you will need to go in a care home, and that is very, very pricey.
Indeed. And those statistics you talk about there, I mean, that's what makes this question so difficult to answer, because, okay, maybe you've got a one in three or one in four chance of these big bills landing one day. They still might not. You know, that still means the chances are lots of people will not have these bills. So it's difficult to plan for. And that's why, you know, I would suggest it's sensible for people to treat care as a sort of known unknown. You know, it's a question. You know, it might happen. And that you also know that it's difficult to plan to pay for it through just saving, and that really it's property wealth. To have that on hand, that's going to be your sort of safety valve, isn't it? And a point I really wanted to get across in this conversation was that it's very important for families to discuss this ahead of time, so that they've got a good idea of, you know, the person who might go into care, what do they feel about it? And also children who have a stake in this, because maybe they stand to inherit a family home. It's really important to have those conversations, isn't it? Because they can be difficult if you leave it too late.
Totally. I think with or without government support, it makes sense to plan for the unforeseen cost of care, not least because there are no specific savings products in the UK for care home fees. So if you're not yet retired, talk to your family, start drawing up a financial plan, which includes the cost of care. You know, even if you end up not needing the money, saving something extra into your pension for the possibility of long-term care will mean the added bonus of a bigger pension pot. And you could also choose to use your annual ISA allowance for this purpose, because remember, you will have instant savings or instant access to your savings when you need it, which you can draw tax-free. Mm. And in terms of the investment strategy linked to that is look at investing in funds with strong yields and low volatility.
Yeah, indeed. And also there's this point here about, you know, many people out there will have banked on using their property in retirement for actually funding their retirement. If you can, you know, maybe that's through downsizing and freeing up equity. That can be a risky strategy if indeed care costs land, and indeed, you know, there may be children out there, or children of elderly parents at least, who are planning on receiving inheritance. Well, you know, you can't really count those chickens, because as we're discussing, you know, care can come along and completely derail those plans.
Absolutely. And I think we need to let go of this emotional connection to the property and the notion of my property being my inheritance, or my children's inheritance, or my property being my pension, and actually dealing with the fact that it's quite likely that you might need to downsize that property, not to leave it as an inheritance or as a pension pot for yourself, but to actually fund the cost of care. That is the reality of an aging population.
Indeed. Look, Michael, just finally, I just wanted to mention an element of all this which isn't as much discussed, but is relevant for us here on the podcast, which is around dividend tax. And we've got this rise that's happening on national insurance, or effectively a rise in the national insurance system, which is going to be called a health and social care levy, as you've said, Micah. That 1.25% is also being added to dividend tax. That just underlines, doesn't it, Micah, that people should try and shield their investments wherever they can from tax, and to invest tax efficiently, and that means, as you've said, ISAs and pensions.
Totally. So this last minute announcement of the 1.25% taxation of dividends was clearly aimed at allaying the criticism that the new policy, the national insurance tax, unfairly puts pressure on the working population to support those already in retirement with very little impact on the very wealthy. The reality is that the dividend tax will probably have an impact on the self-employed or contractors who pay themselves with company dividends. They will face higher tax burdens. But if you are an investor and you are holding your shares within an ISA, you won't be subject to that dividend tax. It's also worth remembering that we have that £2,000 tax-free dividend allowance, mm-hmm. and the personal allowance, which means, according to those who've done the sums, that around 60% of people with dividend income outside of ISAs are also not expected to pay any dividend tax or to be affected by this change in the new tax year.
Okay. Well, Micah, look, we've covered loads there. It's such an important topic, often difficult to talk about, but I'm sure we'll revisit it in the future. But for now, Micah, thanks an awful lot for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.